Hey, y'all, just a quick heads up. The episode you're about to listen to is 8 to 10 years old. Now, these episodes were intended to be evergreen, and I still believe there's a lot of good information in these early episodes, but I do want to let you know that some of my ideas have evolved over time. Times have changed since we made these episodes, and ultimately, I'd like to think I've grown a lot as an artist and a human, and that these don't necessarily represent my best work or the best of the podcast. If you're new around here, I suggest starting with the most recent episode, or at least go back to around 300 and move forward from there. Enjoy the episode.
Hey guys, it's the Creative Pep Talk Podcast, and this is Andy J. Miller. This is my podcast, and the purpose of it is to give you a short and sweet little pep for you creative folk out there. I feel like that pursuing a creative career is a series of struggles. And I don't mean that, you know, full disclosure, currently, thank God, I'm doing pretty well. As far as the work coming in, I've got good jobs coming in. My finances are pretty good. I'm not rich by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, I'm not struggling financially. You know, that's not the struggle that I'm talking about. The struggle I'm talking about is that, that creativity in general is a topic of struggle, of discomfort, of pushing forward and growth. And growth, you never grow from, you rarely grow from the pleasurable experiences. And so I personally feel like the creative people that I know have creative struggles, personal struggles, emotional struggles, all wrapped up into one kind of package. And that's what a big part of this show is about. It's hopefully encouraging you to spur on. But then also, I want to make this show about breakthrough. For me, I'm just a passionate obsessor over breakthroughs in my own life and my own creative endeavors and my work. And then also helping be a catalyst of breakthrough for other people. That there's not much in the world that I like more than to help someone to have some kind of breakthrough. And I love to just reflect information back. I love to think over the issues that creative professionals face and try to get to the bottom of things and articulate things in a way that hopefully creates small breakthroughs mentally. And when you understand things a little bit clearer, and you gain a little bit of clarity in your own path, I think that enables breakthroughs to happen. And so that's kind of what this show is about. And I'm going to keep trying to deliver it to you a few times a week, just to get you through the week and help you just always feel like you've got momentum building in your creative pursuit, which I think is a big deal to enjoying your career as well as like just keep going. So today what I want to talk about was how haters kill your destiny. And I have personal experience with this, and I have a lot of thoughts on this, but I'm going to start with kind of a story. So when I was a kid, we moved around a lot, and I moved from Indiana to Western New York, like an hour south of Buffalo. when I was about 12, I was going into middle school. I'd actually already started middle school. And we went in to a place called Jamestown, New York. And I started at a small school. And things were going all right. You know, the first month, I felt like, I think small environments feel more natural to me anyway. But people, I think when you have a small school, there's less cliques, you know, people are more friendly, and more than anything, they were just interested in this kid that came from somewhere they didn't know anything about. And, you know, I made some friends pretty quickly, but shortly after arriving, I had this weird mix-up, and the truth is, I don't exactly know what happened, but I am very suspicious that what happened was not intentional. So it's hard to even explain how this happened, but some chain of events led to becoming boyfriend girlfriend with the most popular girl in my grade. And I'm pretty certain that she didn't actually want to ask me out. But somehow that happened, and she was too nice to kind of say, actually, I didn't mean to ask you out. I don't know. I don't really know exactly how it happened. It's kind of complex. But that serendipitous moment actually instantly supercharged my popularity, and I became really popular, and that continued for the 3 years that I lived there. And I think, you know, when you're a teenager, affirmation is like the most intense drug. And then I think, you know, personally, I feel like just growing up, without my mom present, she kind of split the scene when I was young. And I think I was just really hungry for that affirmation, you know, even just from a young age. And I think, so anyway, I was just really popular, you know, when I was in middle school. But then we moved back to Indiana to a place called Columbus, Indiana. And we moved to a bigger school. And I remember the first day. And I didn't even start with, it was freshman year, but it was a few months into freshman year, so all the cliques had already been made, and, I think it was like October, and, I remember eating lunch by myself the first couple days, and it was just the worst feeling in the world. I was so depressed. I'd moved from where I felt like king to being the bottom of the totem pole, and you know, I really feel like that through these experiences that I learned some wisdom that I've carried along. And it's stuff I still forget, but I try to remember. And so being at the bottom felt so terrible, and I so desperately wanted that affirmation that the only thing I knew was that if I was popular, I would have that thing back. And, you know, I think... It's such an embarrassing story to tell, but I feel like there's wisdom in it, and there's something to share. And even if there's not, maybe it's just therapeutic to kind of share the story. So I was really depressed, really. And for the first, you know, for freshman, sophomore, junior year, I tried to be popular, basically, which is so dumb. And obviously, trying to be cool never works. And I managed.
This episode is supported by In the Making, an original podcast brought to you by Adobe Express, the all-in-one content creation app included in your Creative Cloud membership. If you are trying to boost the YouTube, TikTok, Reels content side of what you're doing, one episode of In the Making that I think will be super useful to you is their episode with John Yushai. I think John's method for including his audience in the process is really inspiring. And if you want to hear about that and more about leveling up your game in the creator economy, just search In the Making in your podcast player to listen. Many thanks to In the Making and Adobe Express for their support. I really needed to rehaul my website. I was talking to some web people, looking around, and I got intrigued by Squarespace's new Fluid Engine, partially because it just sounds cool, but also because it allows you to drag and resize and layer up anything you can imagine. I dove in, rebuilt my site. It's the most me site that I've ever had. I just absolutely love it. Launched it. Got such a great response. Some industry illustration and designy peers even reached out and was like, hey, who coded this thing, man? I'm like, y'all, I did it by myself. No coding with Squarespace's new Fluid Engine. I told him, like, you should go check it out. You're going to be surprised with what you can do. And I built this thing before Squarespace reached out to sponsor the show. So I was like, boom, easy peasy. I was going to tell you about this new site anyway. Go check it out, AndyJPizza.com, if you want to see what I did with it. If you want to try it yourself, make a site that's totally you, where you can build a portfolio, sell content and courses and all kinds of other stuff, head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain with promo code PEPTALK, all one word, all uppercase.
To kind of weasel my way into the popular group, but I don't think any of them actually liked me. And I didn't really like them, not to diss them. If you're listening to this somehow, no offense, but, you know, we just didn't have any chemistry. We didn't, you know, we just clearly weren't the types of people that mixed very well. And so even by the time I'd kind of weaseled my way in there, I just felt miserable. I wasn't connecting with these people. I didn't feel close to them. I feel like they didn't understand me, and I didn't understand them. And the whole time, I was actually working at a movie theater, and there was a lot of people there that didn't go to my school who showed interest in being my friend. And me being totally blinded by this ridiculous ambition, just didn't really give them the time of day. And it wasn't until like the end of junior year that I just had completely been fed up with all this pursuit. And I just gave up. And it was probably the best, you know, I definitely think that was like 2004. So many things changed during that time. And I started just hanging out with my movie theater friends and a few friends from church, and those relationships actually continue to today. They're my first real meaningful kind of friendships as a young adult, and I learned something from that about affirmation and about, when I'd quit worrying about what people think, people that I didn't necessarily like, that I didn't really, you know, I wasn't seeking their affirmation for who they were as people and their merit. I was seeking it based on just this intangible feeling that was no good, that wasn't worthwhile. And I actually think that there's something to glean from this when it comes to creative careers and pursuits. But before I get to that, let me put a pin in that, and I'll come back. And then I'll just talk about Drake for a minute. I'm not God, and I don't claim to know what Drake's destiny is. But I do have some thoughts, and, I could be completely wrong, but just as an example, if you look at Drake, I feel like he's someone who has been hated on by his community in such a strong way, and in my mind, it seems like he makes a lot of decisions based on these critiques. And so when it comes to, if you look at an industry as a whole, you're always going to have things that are sexier and more appealing and cooler, and things that are less so. And the things that are less so, people go out of their way to diminish them, and to and sometimes these things that are less cool are actually more successful, or they're they're for a wider group of people. And so I think when you look at hip hop, it's you can see that I love using hip hop as a as my examples, because I'm guessing a lot of you guys don't actually listen to hip hop, and I don't listen to it very much either. But it's kind of what I grew up on, and so maybe that's why I like to use it as an example. But if you look at hip hop, when it comes to that crowd, to me it seems like the people that are most celebrated as the coolest of the cool are the people that are the most hardcore when it comes to pure, unadulterated rap. And I think people like Drake, who are known as like emo R&B rap, get a lot of, you know, crap for that, you know. And I think that with Drake, he did all this R&B singing, but he also does rap. And I feel like over time, you've seen him focus more and more on developing his rap chops. And so his albums become more and more hardcore rap. If you look at his biggest single to date, one that, as far as I know, is kind of a an outlier on the new album, is Hold On, We're Going Home. It's his only big single. I think it might even be, it was a number one hit. I don't know. But that song, to me, you know, as an artist, what you're looking for is what natural thing do you have that in the right market can transcend everybody else. And I feel like whether you like that song or not doesn't matter, but it transcended because look at this. So A, it was a number one hit on the radio, which Drake didn't have any of that. It was also I think the number one song from Pitchfork that year. You know, that transcended all other R&B and pop in a lot of ways. But he keeps focusing on getting better as a rapper. Now, compare that to someone like Kendrick Lamar. Kendrick Lamar is kind of this genius rapper that's celebrated from the industry as probably the coolest rapper in the rap game currently. And if you listen to him rap, you know it's like a fish in water. Like it is, he goes in the studio, he writes it on the spot, and he wraps circles around maybe any other rapper of ever. It's just, that's his thing. It's transcendent. It just also happens to be the thing that is the coolest thing in that industry. Now, I just wish that Drake would focus on the other stuff. I like that music. Maybe it's just selfish. I like his R&B stuff a little bit better. But I also think that all of that negative feedback is just possibly putting him on a side road off his path that he shouldn't be on. And I feel like in my life, there have been plenty of times where people that I perceived to be really cool, and I use that term intentionally, cool, really cool, gave me feedback that threw me onto a side path off of the path that I should have been on. And it really, it gave me a big detour. And you know what? The great grace of life is that even on those detours, you can learn skills and learn things that you can apply to what you do, what you're supposed to do. That's the grace of the universe. But I feel like sometimes those comments were meant to put me on a side road. They were meant to diminish what my actual path. They were sometimes they weren't. Sometimes they didn't mean to. And I think, my point is this: affirmation from people that you perceive as cooler than you, or that you respect, or whatever, or just affirmation in general, is such a slippery thing to pursue. And I think there's a degree of affirmation that we as people need. But I think when it comes to your career, if you're too much of an affirmation obsessor, you're likely to get thrown off the path if that's your highest goal. Especially if you're looking for affirmation that from you know, the cool crowd. Because I think what you have to do is sit back and ask yourself, okay, I do need affirmation basically to tell me that I'm going the right direction, but I need it from the right people. So who are the people on my seeking out affirmation list? Who are the people that I put that on that list because they were the hot stuff that were cool? And who is actually doing stuff like I want to do? Who's actually can be a signpost to the type of work that I actually want to do? And then I'll try to, you know, develop positive relationships within that so I can get relevant feedback. I think one of the biggest things that helps this is to understand a level of self-awareness pertaining to what you want to do as a creative person, which I think also looks like understanding what your creative values are. What do you value in art? Not what do the cool people think is worthwhile. That doesn't actually matter. What matters is that you transcend on the path that you're going on. And when I say transcend, I just mean you have this natural raw talent, you've developed these skills, and the market that you're supposed to be in, you shine above other people in a brilliant way, in a way that you can't fake. That's the question. And I feel like if you're out there searching for affirmation that you really don't need or want in your heart, you're going to get mixed up and you're going to go down the wrong path. Now, I personally am someone who tries to hold destiny and anti-destiny kind of in relativity. So I try to think of it as a lot of my things in my life have felt like there was a clear kind of almost predetermined path. And then there's a lot of elements that have felt right where I made it up as I went. And so I feel like you got to hold those things, at least my approach is I hold those things in unison, even though they're contrasting. And I think some of the most truthful things in the world, you have to kind of do that. You kind of have to hold two truths at the same time. And so that's kind of my approach. That's how I deal with destiny or your path or whatever it is. You know, I almost completely believe in it and completely don't at the same time. And I feel like that's actually a valuable, it's been valuable for me to kind of understand that for myself. But I think it's important to go back through your life, go back through your career and say, what were the moments when someone tried to diminish what it is I do, and it threw me off onto a side road that I should have never gone on? What were the, when I go get feedback from somebody, what are the things, like when I get feedback from people now, I don't think, okay, this person's better than me, therefore everything they say is going to be the gospel. No, I think, here's the things that I think that they have, that I appreciate, and are things that I want. Here's the things that I know that they think are important, but they're not things that I want to do in my career. And so when they give me feedback pertaining the first one, I'm going to listen and I'm going to do something about it. But when they give me feedback that's pushing me in a direction that is maybe closer to what they do, but not what I want to do, I'm not going to take that on board, or I'm going to take it with a grain of salt. Then I really do that. And it definitely is less confusing than it used to be when I used to get feedback from peers and teachers. I think when you're young, that kind of feedback can throw you all over the shop, you know? So I think that this is such an important thing to really dive in, and I think it's actually a deeper conversation than ignore the haters, because I think there are times when criticism, even I had criticism early on in my career that was maybe a little bit hateful, but it actually caused me to grow. It actually, you know, that brutal honesty, there were times when it was accurate and it actually helped me. And so I think it's a deeper conversation than ignore the haters completely. But I do think it's helpful to understand how they're possibly stealing the most important thing from you. You know, one way I look at it is when I go visit these big cities, whether it's London or New York City or Portland, when I go there, I'm very jealous of the level of creativity and the amount of amazing creative people that are practicing in these places. And I'm very jealous of what that feels like, you know. But I think partially for me, one of the benefits of kind of being apart from the day in, day out of my industry is that I feel like I've been able to make some courageous decisions that I wouldn't have made if I had that feedback in my face every day of like what's cool and what's not. Because I think when you get a big group of people together and they're all saying different things of what's cool and what's not, it can be very hard to navigate that. And you can be very, can cause you to be very self-conscious about what it is you pursue. Can also mean that some of the times I see these people that are in these bigger groups in these large cities, and it means that the decisions they do make are so vetted and thoughtful that that they're fantastic. They really work. But I also think that some of these solo guys that are spread out throughout the globe make some of the most interesting decisions and come up with the most courageous projects because they don't have that feedback in their face and that constant kind of affirmation or non-affirmation of the things that they want to do that are different. But it's actually those things, those choices that you make that aren't maybe cool, I think those are the things that actually give you a viable career. They're the things that make you unique, and it's actually the key to transcendent work is the stuff that nobody else would do. Like the stuff that everybody else thinks, I don't know about that. That thing, when you start getting onto those paths, it should be a little bit scary. Because once you're doing the work that nobody else should do, that's the place where you're alone. And when you're there, it should start to feel scary. So if you're not feeling scared of the projects you're doing, you need to dig deeper. And maybe it's just a matter of time. For some people it is. But if you're not a little bit scared of the work you're doing, you're probably not pushing past that barrier quite enough. And so I think that's about it. And I hope this helps you. I thank you people who have reviewed this on iTunes, even if it's secretly my mom. I don't care. I appreciate what you're doing. And I think that that's a good way for people to find this show if it goes up in the ratings in iTunes and like the arts category. And I definitely believe in the show. And I really appreciate all the feedback you've been giving me on Twitter and social media. I really appreciate that. That definitely gives me more momentum to keep this thing going. You know, thanks for allowing me to be part of your routine, part of your day. I hope that something I said sparks some breakthrough in your work. Thank you so much. I will speak with you soon.